We are talking today with David Jaffe on Fox Rothschild Podcast. David is a partner with Fox Rothschild in Pittsburgh. He advises clients on corporate finance, mergers and acquisitions, and corporate governance. Topics today relate to challenges facing corporate directors of insolvent companies. Good morning, David.
Good morning.
David, for companies confronting financial challenges, what are the top risks for directors to avoid?
Well, first, let me say that this recession has been unlike previous recessions in the fact that the credit markets have really ceased functioning to some degree, and companies have been faced with an array of suboptimal choices. This financial pressure is likely to continue for some time. So investors, creditors, and corporate stakeholders who have suffered financial losses are targeting directors for having ignored warning signals, taking undue risks, and engaging in reckless behavior. Business practices that might have been acceptable previously are no longer so, and any form of director or officer self-dealing or conflict of interest increases the risk to corporate decision makers. So directors and officers and their advisors need to be proactive in addressing and minimizing those risks. As boards deliberate over restructuring alternatives, if the company's insolvent, they begin to realize that there are no win-win options and that their decisions are likely to be challenged in court by those who end up on the losing side.
David, what are then the basic legal standards that apply to director conduct?
Well, directors have a legal obligation to manage a corporation's business and affairs in good faith and in a manner they reasonably believe to be in the corporation's best interests. In fulfilling this function, directors are viewed as corporate fiduciaries and have to discharge two essential duties, the duty of loyalty and the duty of care. In doing so, directors generally will be insulated from judicial second-guessing by a legal doctrine known as the business judgment rule. The rule protects disinterested corporate directors from liability for corporate acts or omissions through a presumption that they have exercised due care and loyalty and have acted in the company's best interests. But there are exceptions to the rule where courts will examine a board's conduct more closely and actively. Generally, this occurs where the board has failed to use due care or to properly inform itself, and where certain kinds of transactions are implicated, such as merger or change of control transactions, or where conflicts of interest have emerged. Outside of a merger or change of control context, most transactions will fall within the rule absent gross negligence or conflicts of interest. If the company files a voluntary petition to reorganize under federal bankruptcy law, for example, in the context of insolvency, the board will enjoy the business judgment rule presumption unless there was failure to exercise due care or some form of self-dealing implicates the higher enhanced scrutiny standard of review. If there's a conflict of interest where a director has interests in a transaction on both sides of the table, the rule will not apply because any form of director self-dealing will be perceived to compromise director independence. In those circumstances, it's well settled legally that the board has the burden to establish that the transaction is entirely fair and has to pass a very careful scrutiny by the courts. And an especially vexing form of that can occur in an insolvency context, for example, where a director is also representing a creditor of the company.
Certainly very interesting and all complex. David, are the decisions made in solvent times by boards viewed differently through the lens of insolvency?
The short answer is yes. Transactions that would have been prudently calculated risks aimed at increasing shareholder value when the company was solvent will be viewed by creditors as imprudent acts that erode the creditor's capital when the corporation is insolvent, So different standards of behavior will govern directors' conduct in insolvency.
Now, you've written more on in depth on this topic in Directors and Boards magazine, I believe. Is that correct?
It is.
David, from a legal perspective, why must boards know when a company has crossed the line into insolvency?
Well, boards have to determine when the corporation's reached the point of insolvency because that's when the director's duties shift from shareholders to the creditors as the residual beneficiaries of those duties. Moreover, it's important for people to know that insolvency, in fact, is not a prerequisite for relief under the federal bankruptcy law, but it does trigger certain legal rights in the debtor relating to, for example, preferential and or fraudulent transfers to creditors. Under the law, there are various tests for determining corporate insolvency, and they're generally based on different measures of financial deterioration of the corporation.
David, if a major creditor has, say, their own representative on a board, how does that change the legal standards and obligations that directors need to uphold?
Well, it's a clear conflict of interest because when that occurs, the director designee is burdened with two conflicting obligations. One is to act in the company's fiduciary interests, and the other is to act in the creditor's interest. So when a director is faced with this dilemma, that person's likely to serve neither of his masters particularly effectively. On the one hand, his fiduciary duty will preclude him from taking actions that will maximize the recovery for the creditor. And on the other hand, his interests as a representative of the creditor will cast a cloud over his own impartiality. So for the board to preserve its autonomy and decision-making discretion under the business judgment rule in a context like that, it must identify and address all potential conflicts of interest among the directors and in senior management, and it should undertake prophylactic measures to insulate the decision-makers from any actual or potential undue influence by interested parties or from any relationship or fact or circumstance that is likely to compromise a director's independent judgment and objectivity. Because after a dispute has arisen, and therefore with the benefit of hindsight, the court's going to examine carefully the board's deliberative processes in order to determine whether or not the corporation implemented procedural safeguards to ensure that decision-making was fair and informed.
This is pretty serious. And, you know, how, David, can a board special committee proactively identify these potential conflicts of interest?
Well, if a special committee of independent directors is used, courts will often afford great deference to that in establishing evidence of procedural fairness. However, the devil is really in the details. If the facts suggest that the committee is a sham or is merely window dressing for a predetermined outcome, then the courts are going to disregard the business judgment rule and they're going to apply the higher standard of enhanced scrutiny. There have been some recent Delaware cases that have given some clear guidelines for characteristics that courts look for in the establishment of special committees. And they include things like the fact that each committee member should be truly independent and free from undue influence by controlling stockholders or influential creditors or other directors or executives. The mandate of the committee should be clear and unambiguous, and it should be vested with a level of sufficient authority and real bargaining power, including the authority to say no to a transaction and not merely act in an advisory capacity to the full board, but be vested with the authority to negotiate. And lastly, the committee should have the authority to hire its own legal and financial advisors that should be separate from and independent of the corporation's legal and financial advisors, because where committees have relied upon company advisors, the courts have found that the advice has been tainted because of the financial inducements inherent in the advisor's relationship with the corporation and its control parties.
Well, thank you, David. Thanks for being with us today.
My pleasure.
To speak with David directly on corporate finance or corporate governance issues, please contact him at 412-391-6410 or at djaffe, that's D-J-A-F-F-E, at foxrothschild.com. Fox Rothschild LLP is a full-service law firm built to serve business leaders. Over the past 100 years, we have grown to more than 475 lawyers in 15 offices coast to coast. Our clients come to us because we understand their issues, their priorities, and the way they think. We help clients manage risk and make better decisions by offering practical advice. Visit us on the web at www.foxrothschild.com.